Hey, AJ, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, man. We need to start meeting under better circumstances.
Alfie won't give us a break. They just keep hitting targets, and that means that they get a pod. You break the U.S. healthcare system, you get a pod.
You know, your incentive structure seems to be behind all of this. I think the
authorities
might want to talk.
Yeah, that's why these ransomware gangs keep hitting these healthcare facilities. So coming up today, we're going to be talking about the latest ransomware op that's causing some major waves. Alfie has hit a major U.S. healthcare processing system, placing the U.S. healthcare system under major strain. We've also got an interview today with David Haber, who leads one of a new crop of AI security companies. We're going to be talking to him about the security challenges of trying to secure large language models. That's today on Safe Mode.
Welcome to Safe Mode. I'm Elias Grohl, Senior Editor at CyberScoop. Every week, we break down the most pressing issues in technology, provide you the knowledge and the tools to stay ahead of the latest threats, and take you behind the scenes of the biggest stories in cybersecurity.
An attack is coming.
It's about keeping us safe.
He's just a disgruntled hacker.
She's a super hacker. Stay alert.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
This is Safe Mode.
I'm Elias Grohl, the host of Safe Mode, and I'm joined yet again by CyberScoop reporter AJ Vicens. Welcome back to the show, AJ.
What does it mean that I keep having to come back to talk on the podcast?
It means
my beat is cybercrime and state of line threats.
Yeah.
It means that there's too much.
It means your beat is blowing up. And you and I, we've been very busy. We've been asking to get a break from the cybercrime news of the day, and it just won't let up. And the latest incident has to do with a payment processor for a healthcare system in the U.S., as we spoke about in the intro. For folks who haven't heard about this incident, talk us through what's happened.
So on February 21st, a company called Change Healthcare let it be known that there was a cybersecurity incident affecting their platforms. And this particular company plays a key role in processing insurance payments and reimbursements and claims for the medical system in the U.S. And they are owned by a company called Optum, which itself is owned by a company called United Health Group, which is one of the largest companies on the planet and perhaps the largest healthcare company in the United States. And so Change Healthcare occupies a really special place in the sort of stack of the American healthcare system, such that when its systems go sideways, a lot of people feel it. And they're, you know, ever since February 21st, it's become more clear that this is indeed a ransomware incident. And this has had a major impact on the US healthcare system. You know, certainly on the smaller side, the healthcare providers are talking in dire terms about perhaps going out of business, but even larger providers are struggling to make ends meet. I mean, this is paralyzing and crippling the payment side of the healthcare system, which, as we all know, living in this country, right, the money is king in the healthcare system. And that's exactly where the ransomware crew hit.
Yeah. So to put some numbers on this, Change Healthcare, this company that I don't think anyone, you know, outside of the healthcare industry had heard of prior to this incident, it processes something like 15 billion healthcare transactions annually, and their systems touch one in every three patient records. The American Hospital Association came out with a statement on the heels of the attack saying that the incident affecting Change Healthcare is the most serious of its kind leveled against a U.S. healthcare organization. So who was behind this attack?
So initially, the comments coming out of the companies, the victim companies here, were saying that this was a nation state associated group. And I don't know if that's just what they thought at the time. Not going to cast aspersions or anything like that, but it became pretty clear quickly that this was actually a criminal, financially motivated attack by a group called Alfie, who is quite well known in the ransomware space and the criminal cybercrime ecosystem. You may remember them from their greatest hits, such as being involved with the attack on MGM Resorts and Caesars Entertainment last September and August, you know, and many, many other attacks. I mean, they're quite a prolific ransomware operation. You know, as with many of these days, right, they're a ransomware as a service group, meaning that they have affiliates who sort of lease the software and the platform to carry out attacks in conjunction with a core group of developers who then split the proceeds. And so AlphaV is, you know, certainly in the wake too of the recent Lockbit disruptions, AlphaV is kind of the prolific big dog on the block. And this particular attack sort of highlights their prowess, really.
Yeah. I think the last time we were talking about AlphaV in any depth on this show was when the FBI alleged to have taken down their infrastructure in late December. And yet here we are at the beginning of March talking about how AlphaV has potentially crippled a significant chunk of the U.S. healthcare system. What's happened between the FBI takedown of AlphaV systems in December and now?
So, like you said, I mean, the FBI and the Department of Justice in the U.S. and, you know, frankly, their peer agencies around the world have become much more aggressive in trying to do proactive takedowns of these groups' platforms. You know, their hosting, their chat functions, their cryptocurrency wallets, those types of things, attack the infrastructure underpinning these groups because you can't really get to them physically to make arrests typically, because many of them are in countries that do not cooperate with the Western world in terms of law enforcement. So anyway, you mentioned there was an operation in December to take down some of their infrastructure that lasted all of about a few hours, right? Before the group, kind of, we joke about this internally, right? But they said they unseized it and they went about their business, right? With just sort of parallel infrastructure almost. And they just went about their business. They carried out more attacks, millions more dollars in ransoms and extortions. And here we are, right? They are, you know, they just really kept going. That didn't really cause much of a hiccup in their operations. And like you said, now they're crippling the healthcare system.
Yep. And they're now claiming to basically have gone dark, right? Most recently, we saw them put up a notice on their website saying that their infrastructure had been seized yet again by the FBI. But it turns out that's probably not true. You want to walk us through the events of, I don't know, the last 24 hours or so?
Yeah, so it kind of started over the weekend, right? There was a screenshot of a message posted to a Russian-speaking cybercrime forum that said that claimed to be from an affiliate of AlphaV saying, I carried out this attack. AlphaV shut me out and took the money. And they are scammers, essentially. And then it was kind of confusing whether that was real or not. Fast forward 12 hours, 15 hours, all of a sudden the AlphaV website where they post victims and messages and those kinds of things and the data of people who don't pay, that displays a seized by law enforcement banner, which we've become used to in these law enforcement operations, right? They post a message saying, we've got your stuff. And it has the logos of all the various law enforcement agencies. People were pretty suspect of that almost immediately, given the timing and sort of the sequence of events here, because the original affiliate that claimed that they had been scammed posted the Bitcoin wallet address and said, here's where it went. You can see the money. And the beauty of cryptocurrency is such that you can see transactions if you know where to look. And indeed, it looked like, I believe it was on March 1st, there was a $22 million payment made to that wallet. And then subsequently that $22 million was split into seven equal payments to other wallets, and, you know, off it went on its journey to be washed theoretically. Mm.
Let me jump in there for just one sec. So there's been this $22 million payment to a cryptocurrency wallet that we believe is linked to AlphaV. With what level of confidence can we say that this is a payment from some corporate entity linked to Change Healthcare, that, you know, that it's a ransom payment from Change Healthcare to Alf V. Like, what do we actually know about this $22 million payment that's been made to this wallet that allegedly is, you know, linked to Alf V?
Well, in the parlance of the sort of threat intelligence space that we cover quite frequently, I would say we have moderate confidence in this, moderate to strong, but it seems to be a consensus among people that pay attention to these spaces, both on the sort of up and up, the research side, and also on the criminal side. They think this is what happened. Why do we think this? The person that claimed to be the affiliate sort of posted this, that wallet was not sort of flying around, or like the information was not public to the extent that it was just going around everywhere before that. So they post that and say, look here, there was a payment. It was this much. It's in this wallet. There's that. There are firms that track the money that goes to ransomware groups. And one of them says they track this wallet to have been associated with a prior Alf V attack. Then there's also the sequence of events that sort of, they posted everything, they took the money, then all of a sudden they go dark and they're out. You know, they're also, you know, coincidentally, they're selling their source code, Alf V is, but that's sort of separate, right? We should be explicit in saying that we ask the company directly, Change Healthcare, did you pay this money? This report is out there. They are not saying they did not pay it, but they're saying they're focused on the investigation and getting their systems back. So all of this together, again, is in my mind a moderate strong confidence that this is what happened. But if you pay attention to the way the criminals are talking about it, and the cyber crime sort of aficionados, if you will, they certainly believe this is what happened. This is a group that has done this before. After the December operation, right, there was allegations that after that disruption, they did take millions of dollars from their affiliates in that situation. So all of that together sort of gives us the confidence to say this is kind of what happened. And we also believe that this was a fake takedown notice because they literally copied and pasted it from a previous one. But also, you know, for instance, the Department of Justice has told us they were not involved. The UK's National Crime Agency has told other news organizations they weren't involved. So all of this together is really pointing out, as one of the sources told us in our story, that this is just criminals being criminals and scamming each other. This is kind of how things go sometimes.
So yeah, what we've got, I think, in the language of crypto world here, is a pretty classic exit scam, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Alf V has been paid potentially $22 million and was supposed to pay some portion of that to the affiliate that actually carried out the attack. They've declined to do so. And they've now shut down their system. They're saying they're selling their source code. They put up a fake takedown notice to quote another one of their posts in the criminal underground, to say, you know, blaming the feds, that this is the feds' responsibility that they're shutting down, and they're taking the money and running.
Yep. And the last thing I'll say is that most people believe that a rebrand is coming, that they are just going to lay low for a moment and then come out with some new name. And there'll be a little bit of a lag time before we can see that in public, because what will happen is we'll start to see various attacks take place, and then people will analyze the source code and say, oh, these are similarities to the Alf V malware, and then off we go. But, you know, they probably aren't going to be gone for long. It's hard to resist this kind of money.
Yep. And Alf V is a group that, you know, they're known for carrying out high profile attacks, getting in quite a lot of trouble over it, disappearing and then rebranding. It's probably the case that, and correct me if I'm wrong on my cybercrime history here, but it was a group known as DarkSide that carried out the attack on Colonial Pipeline, which disrupted the fuel supply to the Eastern Seaboard. And that group then went away, shut down, and they rebranded, and they came back as?
Alf V Black Cat.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a track record here. And, you know, when you say that, I get a positive sort of note in my mind. If there was any positive to come out of this whole sequence of events going back to Colonial Pipeline, that incident raised the specter of ransomware to literally an international level. It came up in a meeting between President Biden and Vladimir Putin at that time. And so it really kind of highlighted the nature of supply chains, of critical infrastructure and ransomware and the threats here. And it really helped push the Department of Justice and the FBI into their ongoing, more proactive approach. So one can hope that this level of attack against Change Healthcare, which has gotten a ton of attention, there's a ton of political pressure on the US government, maybe something will, you know, similar will push this along to more requirements of the healthcare industry in terms of cybersecurity standards, those sorts of things, or some kind of positive. I'm just looking for a silver lining here, but we'll see, right? I guess time will tell.
Yep. And I think it's worth saying that the Department of Health and Human Services, they've come up with a statement saying they're going to offer some financial support via the Center for Medicaid Services to impacted healthcare providers. So they're trying to prop up the industry, but they obviously can't address the full fallout of this attack via that mechanism alone. So this probably isn't the last time we're going to talk about this. And AJ, welcome back to the show. Thank you for coming back on the show to discuss yet another ransomware incident. I'm sure we'll be back here again very soon.
I'm sure we will. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks, man. Coming up next on Safe Mode, I'm joined by David Haber, the CEO of Lakera. Every day, AI models are being deployed in new places, and that's creating demand for a new industry, companies that secure AI. Lakera is one such AI security firm, and David Haber joins the show to talk about the state of the AI security industry. That's up next on Safe Mode. Just as the revolution in machine learning technology has spawned a new generation of companies to make AI available to corporations, consumers, and governments, it has also given birth to a new class of security companies, those working to secure AI models from attacks and misuse. Joining me today is David Haber, the CEO and founder of Lakera. If the proliferation of AI models introduces new types of security risks, then companies like Lakera are trying to figure out how to solve for these problems. David Haber, welcome to Safe Mode.
Thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, thanks for making the time. So I think a lot of our listeners will have some sense of the shape of the AI industry, or at least some of its major players, but they're probably not familiar with the AI security industry, which, as I understand it, didn't really exist until fairly recently, at least not the type of growth that we've seen in the last year or two. So I'm just curious if we might start with you describing, what does that industry look like from where you sit?
So I think if we take a step back here and we look at what has really changed in the world of software, first and foremost, we are going away from sort of pure code to pretty capable and intelligent machines and agents. Ultimately, we're going away from CPUs to brains that can exhibit intelligent behavior and, you know, perform sort of actions on our behalf and make decisions. Now, there are increasingly universal capabilities within these systems, and there are also increasingly universal interfaces around these AI systems. And so ultimately, we go away from, you know, sophisticated sort of code attacks on software systems to attacks that can literally be run by 12-year-olds. The amount of people on this planet that can, hack themselves into traditional software is arguably pretty small. Now, with, you know, a typical LLM, a large language model, it's literally anyone, you know, that speaks the English language, or for that matter, any other language. So from a security standpoint, what we are ultimately looking at here is that as businesses are deploying, enterprises are deploying hundreds and thousands of these applications, of these capable, intelligent applications into the world, there is a sea change in the risks, in the security risks that they are facing. And so these risks and the underlying threats are of completely new nature. And so that's ultimately what the security industry is about, and quickly evolving at this point, because as you can imagine, a lot of businesses are seeing massive potential in Gen AI. They want to deploy this into the world as quickly as possible. but there obviously needs to be a layer of security to protect these enterprises from the risks out there in the world.
So what types of AI-related security incidents are you encountering in the wild, in your everyday work with clients?
So, you know, if you browse sort of the major news outlets around the world, you see incidents, you know, almost popping up daily these days. Most recently, incident around Air Canada making false promises to a traveler with interesting repercussions on the company. We have, companies leaking sensitive data to Gen AI models, which are ultimately retrained on that sensitive data, which should obviously not be the case. We have, ultimately two types of categories that of threats that companies and, you know, as a matter of fact, society is worried about right now. And that is various forms of adversarial misalignment. So these models, these Gen AI models are, from a more theoretical perspective, they're Turing complete machines, which ultimately means they can exhibit any form of behavior, any form of function that you can, computer can perform. These models can in some shape or form execute. And so there are many ways for the 12-year-olds to ultimately unlock these models into that kind of like arbitrary behavior. That's number one. So it's adversarial misalignment of these models. And then the second sort of major concern, especially on the enterprise side, is data leakage. So data loss prevention is something that we are looking into with a lot of our companies. It's a high concern. Those are sort of the two main categories that I would hint at.
So where does your company kind of fit into the AI tech stack?
So the best way to think about us is as we are going away from sort of the traditional sort of software code to now an intelligent application built on top of Gen AI capabilities. Think of a typical chatbot that companies are building. Could be internally facing, could be externally facing. We see a whole lot of use cases sort of around Gen AI today. Now, the way to think about us as like here is we sort of wrap around the Gen AI component. We easily slot into these kind of applications, and we ultimately protect enterprises from the major security risks that they are confronted with in the world. So this goes from the typical sort of prompt defense capabilities that that enterprises are looking for, again, to sort of data loss prevention and also certain topics around content moderation, of course, as we are dealing with a lot of applications that are potentially exposed to minors people around the world.
So as I understand it, your solution sits at that the prompt layer, and then also at the response layer, right? Your solution is you're looking at prompts, examining them, determining whether they're malicious in some way, and then also examining outputs to determine whether, they contain the thing that they're supposed to. Is that right? Kind of like a filtering tool in a way?
Absolutely. I would say, what we are ultimately doing as a company here is bringing together roughly a decade of safety critical engineering across healthcare and aerospace to build some of the most advanced models out there that can assess the traffic that goes into these applications and also the traffic that comes out. So think of us as a wrapper around that. And then application builders, those that are building the exciting applications for companies all around the world, they can then block any threats in real time. And they could also take action based on sort of the output from these generative AI applications to not have data leak into the world or create any harmful content make that go out. So we are really a wrapper around Gen AI components and protect these applications and enterprises.
So I want to talk a little bit about kind of prompt injection attacks. I think since we had the ChatGPT explosion, I think the prompt injections, have been probably will be the most familiar type of attack to really anyone who's looked at AI systems and AI safety. So, like, what's your approach to trying to address prompt injection attacks you know, using some kind of malicious prompt to get a model to do something that it's not supposed to. How do you solve that problem from where you sit?
Yeah. First of all, the question we should ask is, what is so special about prompt injections? And you know, I think the name that we've chosen here is rather unfortunate because it reminds everyone of SQL injections. Yeah. But that's really like comparing a human to a CPU. It's fundamentally flawed. We are looking at a completely new type of attack here. And the problem, the challenge that we are seeing is that it can be executed by anyone. Anyone that can speak English and has, you know, some creativity around convincing a Gen AI model to do something it's not supposed to do can ultimately execute a prompt injection. And so, I don't know, you played with Gandalf. You're familiar with Gandalf that we launched last year?
No.
It's a game that it's a game that we put out into the world last year. It's probably the most accessible way to learn about large language models and also about sort of the security vulnerabilities of these models, where prompt injection is obviously one of the focus points. So your job is ultimately to convince an AI sort of chatbot to reveal protected information to you. And so what this has created, it's gone absolutely viral on the internet, been played by millions and millions of people. You walk up to any Fortune 500 company, their cybersecurity team has played with Gandalf. It has enjoyed it tremendously. Gandalf ultimately, as a result of what I just said, distills the world's creativity of tampering with these systems into a single system. So we've got everyone from the 12-year-olds to our grandparents and a big chunk of the cybersecurity community play with Gandalf day in and day out, trying the latest and the greatest of attacks on these large language models. And so what we are seeing there is that there are certain patterns in these attacks that we can ultimately build our models around and make our customers aware of. But also there are almost as many variations in these attacks as there are prompts. So fundamentally, we are looking here at the English language. And you know, that comes in a pretty loose form. It's something that we typically can still interpret even if we can't compile it. And that makes it very different to sort of traditional sort of code level attacks. And so the exciting thing that we are working on at Lakera is building the most advanced AI models ourselves that can ultimately assess that traffic in record time, in real time. Our companies can integrate into their applications, and we redeploy these models roughly every 24 hours to our customers so that they get the latest and the greatest protection from the world's largest red team around the world, which is Gandalf, from some of the application data that we are observing and sort of the real world attacks that we are seeing. And of course, also all the public data that's available and, you know, sort of knowledge that we get from research groups around the world.
So you have kind of a constantly updating AI model being built using this kind of free for anyone to play game. That's at the root of your prompt injection kind of detection method.
So the game is one pillar of the data that we are ingesting. It's one important pillar. But like I said, there are more to that. So two more, at least, the application data and public data that we are also ingesting. These are very large amounts of data. The volume we are looking at is very, very large and very varied. And then we internally amplify that data as well by several orders of magnitudes. Now, if we take a step back here, again, we've gone from sort of the CPU to sort of real human-like capabilities here. And that's ultimately something that's living and breathing, right? We are looking at something that's constantly evolving in its capabilities and in its sort of also sort of security vulnerabilities that, you know, people can use to ultimately exploit these systems. So for us as a security solution, it is important that we coexist with that sort of living and breathing layer of AI capabilities. And so we are constantly 24/7 continuously monitoring the world's intelligence around AI security, ingesting this into our models, and we can redeploy this to our customers once every 24 hours.
It's kind of fascinating to me that it we're concerned about the risks of AI models, and then we're building additional AI models to address the security vulnerabilities of other AI models. And it would seem to me that the fact that the security component is itself also relies on AI in order to protect an AI system would seem in the abstract to be rather brittle and potentially quite unresponsive to, you know, things it hasn't seen before. Like, how do you think about that? The fact that, you know, we're building these systems kind of, you know, at a certain point, like it becomes turtles all the way down. Is that an issue for these models? Am I wrong in thinking that? Or not for these models, for these security systems?
I think you're hitting on a great point here. And ultimately, it comes down to we are seeing sort of three different approaches in the security market right now. First approach is around solutions are using rules to identify, hard-coded rules to identify things like prompt injections and sort of toxic output from these models. Now, that's not going to work for a variety of reasons, just given the complexity of data that we are processing here. I mean, we've so far only been talking about text-based conversations here. We already see among our companies that they are integrating multimodal capabilities. So we are suddenly processing not only text, but we are processing images, video, audio. What we ultimately seeing is the evolution of a completely multimodal compute stack. There's no way we are going to encode rules for some of the security issues that we are seeing across these modalities. We are not learning, we're not building autonomous cars based on rules these days. It's all learned. So that's the first part. Second sort of, or camp, I should say. Second camp is solutions that use ChatGPT to secure ChatGPT. Now, while that has many theoretical sort of limitations, there are also a couple of practical concerns here. One is, I mean, it's been successfully shown that you can meta prompt inject models, which ultimately means I can also hijack the security layer very easily. This goes towards what you just mentioned. But also from a user experience standpoint, I mean, right now these models are extremely slow. So, you know, we know for a fact that, execution speed is key. And so ultimately, again, this may sound like a bit of a romantic idea, but I wouldn't entertain that too much. Because yes, you do get into a lot of security issues and it's not a great user experience. Now the third camp, and that's where we are in, is ultimately an AI first approach where you build your own hyper specialized and super optimized AI models that do nothing but assess the security trap, the security sort of risks and the traffic that's going into these models and that's coming out across all the different modalities. And so with that data that we are ingesting and these models, that's ultimately the product of that is hyper accurate and hyper efficient models that our customers can deploy. And those don't have that sort of these loopholes that you can exploit if you just sort of stack one layer on top of another.
Yeah. So if I were to try to attack your model, your security model, I guess I would probably, I would try to go after the data that you're using to train your model probably, right? I would, knowing that, your open source game, Gandalf, is one of the sources of data for your model. Maybe I would try to poison your model using inputs to Gandalf. Like, how do you think about securing your own model against attack if your security model is the one that's then sitting on top of other models in order to provide their security?
Yeah. I mean, I guess for all the obvious reasons, I can't go into too much detail here. But what I can say is that on all different fronts, we've got mechanisms in place that ultimately, you know, make that, you know, practically impossible to do exactly what you just said.
Okay, cool. Well, let me just, why don't we step back a little bit? I mean, we've been talking here about the proliferation of AI models and kind of their implications somewhat, but I want to drill down on that and ask you, what do you think are the novel security implications of, you know, widespread AI model proliferation? You know, Air Canada, for example, deploying a chatbot being just one of, you know, thousands of examples right now of how these models are being deployed in the wild.
So I think ultimately what we are looking at here is that as a security expert, you still have to deal with all of the traditional, like non-AI specific cybersecurity issues. All of that world still exists. Now, the world has also just become a lot more complex because we now have these super capable AI systems that we can interface with in completely novel ways. And so a lot of the risks that we are seeing is really at the intersection of the universal capabilities that these models are bringing with these universal interfaces. And so a great resource to learn about what the specific risks are, we are collaborating a bit with that group as well, is OWASP. So there's a great group at OWASP, the top 10 sort of LLM vulnerabilities that they've identified range from things like prompt injection to how to secure the output from these models to also more practical things like over-reliance, you know, that ultimately any user or any person interacting with these systems can trust these models in ways that they probably shouldn't be trusted and base decisions on that. And so those types of new security risks that are quickly evolving here and are already present, as we see with some of these examples in the press, and a lot more things that we see sort of internally as well, is that existing security solutions, they don't address these AI-specific threats. And so we are now in a race to ultimately equip enterprises around the world with protection from the things that I just mentioned. Mm. Now, this is also just the beginning, right? Because right now we are building applications where we always have a human in the loop, or mostly a human in the loop. So a typical example is some form of chatbot or talk to your data application. A human is in the loop fundamentally. But what we're already seeing is that companies are connecting these systems to downstream systems and automating, you know, workflows using these capabilities. So we are quickly getting into the world of what we would call agents. And so these agents now come with universal interfaces and universal capabilities. And we also connect them to all of like a corporation's sensitive data. Or in our personal lives, we are connecting them to our Gmail account, to our calendar, to, you know, our sort of contacts and lots of more things. And so what we are seeing is the evolution of what we would call the Internet of Agents, which is ultimately that highly interconnected web of super capable agents that, you know, move at speeds that we can't comprehend, and they make decisions on our behalf. And the big question that we ultimately have to think about as a society is, how do we trust these interactions in that digital world that is run by agents on a personal level, on a corporate level? How do we trust these interactions? And so what we are after with Lakera is ultimately building that security layer for the Internet of Agents that will allow us to trust these interactions and make sure that no compromised agent can take advantage of other agents in that network. Because sooner or later, you will have your personal agent that helps you with all the tasks that you don't want to do. I will have mine. And next time we do a podcast, you know, these two will be communicating to each other to figure out a good time and you know, maybe also give us some inspiration on what we should talk about. And so bits move faster than atoms. And so we are moving into a world where, you know, security needs to operate at that speed and at that sort of level of fidelity so that we can trust the AI that is quickly evolving here.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm glad you brought up agents. I was going to raise this. There was, this is definitely, I think, where the industry seems to be going. There was an article in the trade publication, kind of tech focused publication, The Information, on February 7th. They had this headline: OpenAI shifts battleground to software that operates devices, comma, automates tasks. The idea being that AI systems are going to take control of a person's device in order to, as you put it, right, carry out tasks, things that they themselves don't want to do, or maybe, you know, the computer can do more efficiently. And this shift in how we're thinking about AI systems, as you rightly point out, requires a huge amount of trust in AI systems. Is it enough to then, you know, have another AI model that's sitting on top of the AI model, scrutinizing the output of the AI model to, you know, make my dinner reservation or whatever it is, or, you know, automatically transfer the data from my, you know, customer relationship management platform into my, you know, quarterly financial performance report, whatever it is, right? Like, is that the world that kind of you envision, where you just where you have AI agents, or we have AI systems rather, constantly scrutinizing the outputs of other AI systems and either giving it a green light or a red light, and, you know, kicking it up the chain for a human to work on and scrutinize? Like, is that the security model we're headed for?
I think it's certainly part of it, but we are obviously opening up a pretty complex world here. And I think if we take a step back, it's partially around sort of protecting agents. And I think AI is the best sort of tool we have right now to protect, you know, sort of any individual agent operating in that world. But there's a lot more to it. The fundamental question is around, how do we build the infrastructure? How do we build the fabric for these agents to operate on? How do we elevate sort of current concepts that we are used to ultimately take into account some of the trust and security issues that we've been discussing? And so this goes way beyond what any of us are working on and doing right in this very moment. We are ultimately headed into a world where we need to trust really any form of digital interaction. Just 1 or 2 weeks ago, we saw, OpenAI now offering sort of prompt to video capabilities. You may have seen Sora. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's breathtaking. That is absolutely breathtaking. We are looking at content that we just don't know if that's real or generated anymore. And maybe to some extent, it doesn't matter at all. It doesn't matter if it's real or generated, but in some cases, it certainly does. And so, you know, while we talk about video here, this obviously goes into text, it goes into sound. And ultimately, you know, at some point we have full-blown avatars that we will interact with. And so I think the question that we need to ask ourselves is, what are the elements in that world where you don't know anymore what or who you're interacting with? What are the elements in that world, in that digital world, that is run by agents making decisions for us, like determining our interactions? What are the elements that ultimately allow us to trust that world and those interactions? And so that's what we need to think about. And that world is coming sooner than we think. You're right. I mean, you mentioned an OpenAI announcement here. The world is heading there. We will look at corporations that will be run by super capable agents, probably in a matter of months, not years. And so we are heading there sooner than later. So now is the best time to think about this.
And I mean, to kind of like put a pin in it, right? Like the kinds of things that you're telling us that we need to think about, we currently, as it stands, we don't have the tools to really do any of these things. We don't have the tools to verify what is AI produced and what is not really. We don't have any effective watermarking tools. And we don't really know how to think about some of these broader questions that you're raising about, you know, trust in AI ecosystems. And it's not even clear to me that technical solutions are the way to go here, that the solution to a technical problem is a technical one here. It seems like a lot of these solutions have much more to do with how we think about, as human beings, these systems and how we approach them in, you know, social contexts.
I'm fundamentally an optimistic person. And I think the flip side of that is we have a lot of people, a lot of very bright people, not enough at this point, but we've got a lot of bright people that are looking into exactly these kind of questions that we're discussing here. And there's a lot of interest in the space. There's fortunately a lot of money going into the space. So I'm hopeful that we can put together the toolkit that we need to trust that digital world. I think fundamentally AI can bring a lot of fantastic benefits to us as humans and to the world. So I'm a big believer that we will make this.
All right, I think that's a great note to end on. David, when we have an AI running a corporation in 3 months, we'll have to have you back on the show to tell us about it. Thank you so much for making the time to speak with us. It's great to hear your perspective on these issues.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Safe Mode, a weekly podcast on cybersecurity and digital privacy brought to you by CyberScoop. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating and a review. And share it with your friends, your mom, your dad. Nobody wants to get hacked. To find out more information or to contact me, your host, please visit cyberscoop.com.